Okay, we're beginning on the top of Chav Chet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is still speaking about Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus, who is giving us some stories about Rabbi Elazar's life, about his hashkafa, and the Gemara is going to continue to investigate that, and then it's going to move on to the Talmidim of Hillel, who's going to bring us back to, again, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and others that were the Rebbeim of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. So here it says, Maseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, sheshavat b'Galil ha'elyon, spent time up in the Upper Galilee, v'shalu shloshim halachot b'Hilchot Sukkah. And they asked him 30 questions of Hilchot Sukkah. Now whether this is the same incident as before, where he was up in the Galilee, and this was over Sukkot, or whether this was on a Shabbat, not on Sukkot, Shabbat before Sukkot, where they asked him questions. They asked him, posed 30 questions to him. 12 of them he said, I heard the halacha, I heard what the halacha is, and he told them. 18 amar lahem lo shamati. About 18 of them he said, I didn't hear, and therefore he didn't tell them what the halacha was, because he didn't have a mesorah about that. It's just the opposite. 18 amar lahem shamati. About 18 of them he said, I heard, I have a mesorah, and therefore this is the psak halacha. 12 amar lahem lo shamati. And then 12 of them, I didn't hear about them. Because of what he did here, they said, wait a minute, you only say things that you've heard, b'misora, you don't have anything else outside of the misora that you tell in terms of halacha. Amar lahem, hizkakatuni lomar davar shelo shamati mipi rabutai. Right now, you're asking me to say over something I didn't hear from my rebbeim. And now I'm going to explain to you my whole hashkafa. This is my way. This is my MO. This is the way that I conduct myself, which is meyamai lo kidmani adam bebet midrash velo yishanti bebet midrash. Number one is nobody was ever in the Beit Midrash before me in the morning. Number two is I never slept in the Beit Midrash. Lo shinat keva velo shinat arai. I didn't take a nap in the Beit Midrash. I didn't take a full sleep in the Beit Midrash. Now that relates to the daf from Shabbat about sleeping and napping during the daytime in the Beit Midrash or with your tefillin on. Lo anachti adam beBeit Midrash v'yatzati. And there was nobody left in the Beit Midrash when I left at night. So I was the first one there in the morning, and I was the last one there at night. Velo sichati sichat chulin. And in case you're wondering what I was doing that time, I never spoke words, mundane matters, about mundane matters. I was always involved in Kodesh. Lo amarti davar shlo shamati mipi rabbi meolam. And I never said anything over that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. Rashi points out that he's explaining something. He says, I didn't say anything over that I didn't hear from my Rebbe. And maybe you suggest that I missed something that my Rebbe said and I didn't know everything that my Rebbe said. He says, I was the first one in the Beit Midrash. I was the last one to leave and I never fell asleep. So I didn't miss anything. So if you're wondering what I have everything that my Rebbe ever said. I know what he said. And so when I say I don't know or I didn't hear about it, that's because he didn't say it. Because had he said it, I would have known about it. So that's Rabbi Elazar's shita about only saying over things that he had been misora from his Rebbe. Amru alav al Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Now Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus' Rebbe. You know the Mishnah in Avot, Chamisha Talmidim ayu the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. There were 5 Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. One of those was Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus, about which it said, Beresucha inu me'abei tipa. He was like a cistern. A lined cistern that loses nothing. Everything he heard, he didn't forget. But exactly, that's exactly what Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus has described here. He's not a chadshan, he's not a mahapech, but everything his Rebbe said, he knew. And that's what he was willing to say over. Now, he'll see here that his midot, or this hashkafa that he had, came from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, mi amav lo sach sichat chulin. Number one is, we know by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai that he never spoke in mundane manners, he always is engaged in Torah. Below Allah, dalat amot, below Torah, below tefillin. He didn't move 4 amot without speaking in Torah, chazering his gemara, his girsa, and wearing tefillin. Below kidmo adam bebeit midrash. Nobody got there before him in the Beit Midrash in the morning. Below yashan bebeit the midrash. He didn't sleep there. Below shinat bekeba, below shinat arai. He didn't take a nap, snooze, sleep. Below here hair bimvaot hamituna fot. He was not in the higher hair in Torah in places that were inappropriate, meaning if he went through places that were dirty, places where it was improper to learn Torah, he didn't think in Torah. Again, he didn't leave anybody behind him in the Beit Midrash, means he was the last one to leave. Nobody ever found him sitting silently, doing nothing. Anytime he was sitting, he was reviewing, he was chazering over his learning. V'lo patach adam delet l'talmidav. Nobody ever opened up the door for his students to come in. Elohu be'atzmo. He himself got up and opened the door to let them in. He didn't have anybody who worked for him or did his bidding. He did it himself. Lomar davar shalosh shama mipi rabo miolam. He never said anything over that he didn't hear from his Rebbe. So here you see that Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is very similar to his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Many of the midot that were described by Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus are also now found, we see, in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. V'lo amar higia eit lamod min beit ha-midrash. And he never said that the time had come to leave the Beit Midrash, chutz me'arvei Pesachim ve'arvei Yom HaKippurim, except for these two times, which is Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach because of the Korban HaPesach that had to be run in the afternoon, plus they had to get the Seder started on time so that the kids would be awake for it. Erev Yom HaKippurim because of the requirement to eat prior to Yom HaKippurim. Now this Memro in the Gemara in Pesachim is brought to shame Rabbi Akiva, which is interesting because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus' Rebbe, and Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus is Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe. Therefore, it wouldn't be surprising that it might have come from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, but we have it quoted elsewhere from Rabbi Akiva, but that's in a line called the Grand Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because his Rebbe, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And that's how maybe Rabbi Akiva got this Mesorah as well. And then the Gemara says, as we've been noting all along, V'chein ayer Rabbi Elazar tamido nohega charav. Elazar ben Hyrcanus took up that same direction as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. All these things you see in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai were found in Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. And that really leads to the two schools of thought in terms of Torah. We see this machloka between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. In other places, we see it come through Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, certain lives that are kulo Torah, kulo dedicated to Torah. Something where you see that they never spoke in mundane matters, they always were engrossed in Torah, wearing tefillin. Certain type of individuals, and that we know that Rabbi Akiva is a similar type of persona in terms of his complete dedication to Torah. He leaves his wife for the 14 years, builds up all the Talmidim, and with same thing by Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So it's a very similar school of thought or dedication or approach to Torah. Tanu Rabbanan. Shmonim Talmidim ayu lo lehilal hazaken. So now we go up to the next level of Rebbe. So here we had Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, his Rebbe is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, his Rebbe is Hillel HaZaken. About Hillel HaZaken it says, he has 80 Talmidim, 30 mehem ruim tishrei aleihem shechina ki Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 of them were so qualified that they were a greatness, that the Shechina would be shown on them like Moshe Rabbeinu. 30 mehem ruim shetamod lehem chama ki Yeshua ben Nun. There are 30 of them that were of the stature that the sun would have stopped for them, just like for Yoshua ben Nun. And Esrim ben Unim, and then there's like these 20 middle type of guys. Gadol shebikulan, Yonatan ben Uziel. The greatest of these 80 Talmidim is Yonatan ben Uziel, but we know because of his Targum, the Torah, he wrote the translation, an Aramaic translation, but it's an enhanced Aramaic translation. It's not just a word-for-word translation. Again, whenever you have a translation, you have to determine when you're translating, do you translate word for word, or do you translate in the spirit of what is written there? Those are two different types of translations, that's one. And number two is, when you do translate, do you also enhance or add? Yonatan ben Uziel translates, again, along the thematic lines, but many times adds in the Memrot of Chazal. It's not just a translation, it's explanatory translation, where there's additional midrashim and mamrei chazal that are included in the translation into Aramaic. Katan shebikulam, the lowest of them, 80 students, the bottom of the poll was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the least of the Talmidim of Hillel Zakein, and about him, we're talking about him. He said Hillel, then you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, then Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus. That's the Shoshelet HaMitzorah that we're speaking about. Amru alav Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shelo niach mikra u'mishna gemara halachot v'agadot dikdukei Torah v'dikdukei sofrim kalim v'chamurim because they wrote shavot tukufot u'gematriot sichat malachei asheret v'sichat shedim v'sichat tekalim mashalot kovsim mashalot shualim davar gadol v'davar katan. Nothing. He didn't leave anything out. So let's go through what all these items are. Right, some of them are very easy to figure out. Some are a little more difficult. But he lived, mikra is Tanakh. Mishnah is what we know as Mishnayot, the Shas Mishnayot. Gemara doesn't exist. Remember, he's a Tana, he's not an Amora. So when we're talking about Gemara, we're not talking about what we're looking in the Gemara. So whenever the Gemara uses the term Gemara in this context, it means the explanation or the understanding of the Mishnayot. There were Tanaim that came before him, Those Tanaim, they had Mishnayot from those Tanaim, Memrot from those Tanaim, explaining them, explicating on them, figuring out when there's a stira between them, how do we reconcile? The same style of our Gemara that tries to deal with the Mishnayot that we have, so too, the later Tanaim are dealing with the earlier Halachot, which are obviously says Halachot no Moshe Misinai, Agadot, which is the Agadato, that's the other side of the Torah, and the non-Halachic interpretation of the Torah. Diktukei Torah, Rashi says, is Ribuyei Otiot. When you have an additional letter or extraneous letter, what do you do with that? What's the limud from that letter? Diktukei Sofrim, Rashi says over here, these are the Gzerot and Takanot Chachamim that were instituted. Yochanan ben Zakkai had a number of those Takanot that were established, especially with regards to the Churban HaBayit. Then we have Kalim VeChamurim, which is the Rima LeMeidim VeKal VeChomer. That's something that's learned through a Kal VeChomer, not something that's a Mesorah, but something that is extended or extrapolated from something we have through a logical argument. Gzerot Shavot, Gzerot Shavah, which you have a Mesorah about, where two words connect. And Tkufot is about the setting of the calendar, that is the lunar solar calendar, the interaction between them. Gematriot is interesting, Rashi brings in terms of Gematriot. The simplest form is, for instance, by the Nazir, how do you know that Stam Zerot is 30 days? There the Gemara says, because it says Iyeh. And the gematria of Iyeh is 30. So that's one gematria where we have a limud from. Rashi also brings the more complex gematriot, which he calls Adbash, and other forms where you exchange the first letter with the last letter, and so on and so forth, that gives you some sort of interpretation. So that's also included here, these gematriot, he knew. Sichat Malachei Asharet, the conversations of the angels, right? Not much to add over here. Then he says, V'sichat Shedim, V'sichat Dikalim, about which Rashi says, Lo Yadati Mahi, I don't know what it is. I'm not exactly sure what these things are. Obviously, they are, you know, things in other spheres, other worlds. Now, Mashalot Kofsim, Mashalot Shualim is interesting. Mashalot are parables. But as Rashi says over here, these are things that are used to explain. They're like common wisdoms. Assign credit or attribution to, oh yeah, the launderers used to say. It's not that somebody in particular said them, but those are the types of mashalim that are brought down to help understand things, to make it clear or to give tochacha or to give musar. Mashalot kovsim, mashalot shualim could explain that mashalot shualim is using animals as the mashal, like the world of animals to explain something. Mashalot Kovsim is more using whether it's a profession or the world of humans to explain something, a story. Find very similar by Shlomo Melech when it's describing his wisdom. Also, it talks about this idea of these mashalot. Now, davar gadol ver davar katan. Nothing big, nothing small. Now, that's a more generic term. What does that mean? So the Gemara says, davar gadol, maseh merkava. Big thing is the maseh merkava. Davar katan is havayot de'abayi virova. Are the machlokot of Abayi Virova. So first of all, this has implications. My brother-in-law reminded me that Rosenzweig made the point that here, in terms of ranking and hierarchy, the Gemara puts Davar Gadol is Maseh Merkava. Let's talk about Hashkofa, or talking about whether it's Hashkofa on the side of philosophy or in the theological understanding of God, Maseh Merkava, which we'll see in the Gemara Chagiga. And then the Havayot Abayi Virova, which is the Halochot, that's Davar Katan. Davar Gadol is the philosophy and the theology behind what we practice. And here there's a ranking of those in terms of Davar Gadol. Davar Katan would seem counterintuitive to what we think, but that is the way that the Gemara ranks them. The other thing is, Havayot Dabai Virova, Rashi has a very important explanation. Here he says, Kol Ibai Luhu Labai Virova. Any question that Rabbi and Rava have, where they have a machloket, he, in all those speakout, he understood them and gave a reason. And they were forgotten in the time of Amoraim. Abai and Rava are way after the time of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. To say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knows about Havayot Abai Virova is backwards, because Abai and Rava are trying to explain Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The point is, and this is what Rashi says, is that in the time of the Tanaim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai understood all of these issues. Anything needed clarification, he was able to explain the Mishnah, he was able to explain the Psukim and the Drashot very clearly. Now, they got forgotten.
So there wouldn't have been any machlokes between Abai and Rava because he knew the...
Correct. So Abai and Rava's machlokot are a derivative of forgetting that which Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew. He had a clear understanding of these positions or points. And then Abai and Rava are arguing about something that was said in the Tanaim or something that was a Mesorah. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in his time, that didn't exist. That machloket didn't exist. It's a later machloket that derives from the fact that there was stuff that was forgotten. Right? So that's a important hashkafic approach in terms of machloket, how to view machloket of Abayin Rova. Are they arguing about something that's misinai? Or is there a break in the Mesorah? The way Rashi has it is that there's a problem in the Mesorah. There's a break in the Mesorah here. And therefore, they're trying to clarify what the Mesorah was. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was in a time period, or was learned enough to know that they didn't have those issues. They didn't have anything like that. And therefore, Havayot Abayin Rova is not about their question. You could have argued that he knew the two sides that Abayin Rova had. The two approaches. He knew both of them. That's not the way Rashi learns it. He knew it, and therefore there was no Machloket Abayin Rova. And that's the way he views this understanding of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This is a pasuk that's brought in terms of every tzaddik, the Atid Lavo, has 310 olomot that are waiting for him, because it says, Lanchilo Havai Yesh, to give those that are beloved to me Yesh. Yesh in Gematria is, Shenyu is 310. But so Tehem Amalei, and I will fill their coffers, their storage areas. So over here, this is the same idea, that Yochanan ben Zakkai was so connected to Hashem and to Torah that he had everything. There was nothing missing from what he had. If this is the way that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who is the lowest on the totem pole of Hillel HaZaken's Tamidim, Kadosh B'kulam, Al-Khad Kama B'kama, then certainly the biggest of them, meaning Yonatan ben Uziel, if this is what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai knew, then way, way, way above that is what Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel knew. And then they tell a little anecdote to give us a sense of that, which is, Amru Alav al Yonatan ben Uziel, they said about him, B'shashi Yoshev Osek B'Torah, while he was sitting engrossed in Torah, called Of Shuperech Alav Miyad Nisraf. Any bird that flew by him used to burn up, used to be singed. Why is that? So Rashi says, because the Malachei Asheret Mitkabsim Lishma Torato. The angels were coming to hear the Torah of Yonatan ben Uziel. Yonatan ben Uziel's Torah is such a high level that even the angels came to hear what he had to say. And since the angels were hanging out, the birds, when they flew by, got singed by all those angels that were sitting there. So it was a result of his Torah. I heard many years ago that this is the idea of a Talmid. Talmidim many times have tremendous powers, but they also, because they're youngsters, they don't have control over those powers. They don't have a way to keep them in check and understand when to utilize them or not utilize them. So here you have Yonatan ben Uziel, who has all this tremendous learning and connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and sometimes a bird flies over and it's singed. Now he's learning from Hillel HaZaken. They don't tell that story about his Rebbe Hillel, they only tell about the Talmid. And sometimes the Talmidim takes time before they can develop and take control of everything that they have, and that might be an indication of this. We have a similar story in B'mei Madikin by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. When they come out of the cave, they look around and they're burning everything up because they can't believe people are doing mundane activities when there's Torah to learn and so what to learn. And then Hashem says, this is what I let you out of the cave, back in there. So they go back in for 12 months and then they come back out again. When they come back out again, everywhere Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon looks is singed, burned up. And everywhere Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai looks, fixes whatever his son ruins. But the same idea there. The youngster has less control over it. The elder is able to take control and to harness it in the proper manner. So that might be what the statement about Yonatan ben Uziel is over here. Obviously, the Gemara is bringing the anecdote as a statement of the greatness of Yonatan ben Uziel, but he's still at this point a Talmud, and maybe that's what it's being described here. All right, next Mishnah. Mishaya roshov rubo b'suka v'shukhano b'toch habayit. Whoever has his roshov rubo, his head, and the majority of his body in the sukkah, where his table is in the house, Beit Shammai poslim, Shammai says it's pasul, Beit Hillel makshirim. Beit Hillel says that's fine. Now, if you remember from the Gemara back on Gimel Amud Aleph, not so long ago, but from the beginning of the Masechta, that this machloket is talking about a sukkah gedolah. This is a sukkah where there is sufficient space for him to be in there with his table and everything. It just happens to be sitting right by the doorway, sitting right by an edge, where he, Rosh HaRubo, is in the sukkah, and his shulchan is inside of the house. This machloket Beit Shammai also led to a major machloket in the Rishonim as to how to view the Psak Halacha with regards to this machloket. Back there on Daf Gimel and Aleph, the Gemara says the Halacha is ke Beit Shammai. But that was by a sukkah ketana. Over there was when you had the minimum size of a sukkah. The minimum size of a sukkah, Beit Hillel says it's enough to have Rosh HaRubo, the sukkah. Whereas Beit Shammai requires Rosho Rubo v'shulchano b'tocha sukkah to reach the minimum size of sukkah, 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So we pask in like Beit Shammai. That's what the Gemara says on Gimel Amud Aleph. The machloket Rishonim is the din the same with regards to a sukkah ktana and a sukkah gedola? Are the reasons the same? And therefore, the machloket will pass on like Beit Shammai in both cases? Or are these two separate machlokot? Just because the halacha is like Beit Shammai by Sukkah at Katana doesn't mean it's like Beit Shammai here by Sukkah Gedola. So we discussed that much more extensively on Gimel Na'at Aleph. But you can see here that the Shulchan Aruch following the Rambam and the Rif paskins like Beit Shammai in both instances, but many believe, many of the Rishonim believe, and that the halacha, that it may not be the case that the halacha is like Beit Shammai when it comes to a sukkah gdola by the case that we're speaking about over here. Amru lahem Beit Hillel Beit Shammai lo kachaya maseh shalchu ziknei Beit Shammai ziknei Beit Hillel. Wasn't there this incident in which the elders of Beit Shammai Beit Hillel went to vaker at Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranit and went to visit this Tana? And that's exactly how he was sitting. He had Roshov Rubo in the Sukkah, and his table was inside the house. And they didn't say anything to him. So, implicitly condoning his behavior and not saying that it was a problem. How can you bring a proof from this? They did say something to him. This is the way you practice Sukkah. You've never been Mekayim the Mitzvah of Sukkah your whole life. That's where that Beit Shammai, that's what they said to him. So Machlokim Tim Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai here is about exactly what the conversation was with Rabbi Yochanan Choranit. They agree that he was sitting in this manner. Question is, what was the response of the Chachamim? Beit Hillel says they were silent about it. Beit Shammai says that they spoke up and they said to him that he was acting inappropriately. Now what's interesting here, it says, Lo kayamta mitzvah sukkah meyamecha. In this case, you were never mekayim the mitzvah sukkah. How is Beit Shammai saying such a thing? If you believe shovrubo b'tzukah and shulchano b'tocha bayit, what's the problem here? Is there an inherent problem here? Because the minimum size of sukkah you have. So if there's no inherent problem here, that means it's a gzerat or takanat chachamim. It's a takanat chachamim. What does it mean that you're not yotze the mitzvah of sukkah? The right, or you were fine. If this is a gzerah derabanan. This is what we spoke about again back on Daf Gimel and Aleph. Tosafot discusses in that context as well, which is once you have Gzerat Chachamim, can they be mafkir your right to be Mekayim the Mitzvah? Can they take away your ability to Mekayim the Mitzvah? And that's what they say, Lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. Even though he was sitting in a totally kosher sukkah, a sukkah is kosher midoraita, because he sat in a way that the Chachamim said you may not sit, does that take away your mitzvah of sukkah? So those that argue that the reason for Beit Shammai over here is a Gzerah, then you would have to say that lo kayamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha is that the gzeirah forfeits your right to mikayim the mitzvah. Or you have to say that there is a problem midoraita here, that there's a doraita problem. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel are arguing similar to by sukkah ketana, by sukkah gedola, this same setup is not a problem midrabanan, but maybe a problem deoraita. Because of the way that you're situated, it's not shema yimashech achar shulchano, maybe dragged after the shulchan, that's what we're worried about. But the way that you're sitting means that you're not living in the sukkah. And therefore, that's the problem. So depending on how you view the problem in this Mishnah, will also influence how you have to interpret this line that's here in the Mishnah. Nashim v'avadim uktanim turim in a sukkah. Women, eved k'nani, and k'tanim and minors are all turim in a sukkah. Katan shein tzarich li'imo chaya b'sukkah. A katan who no longer needs his mother has reached the age of what we call chinuch. He is chayav sukkah. He has to join in the sukkah, not midoraita, but midrabanan, mishum chinuch. He has to be in the sukkah. Maseh v'yaldak alato shel Shammai HaZaken. There was an incident where the daughter-in-law of Shammai HaZaken gave birth. Bichetet amaziva. And in the house, he rolled away the roof, peeled away the roof above the baby. V'sikech agave amita v'shvil katan. And he put on a skach right over there so that the little baby would be in the sukkah. The Gemara will ask, maizel listor. Wait a minute, you just told us that the threshold of age for a child is when he doesn't need his mother. Here we're talking about a newborn baby and he's putting a sukkah on top of them. So, Menani Mile. How do we know that this is true? The Tanu Rabbanan, Ezrach, says Ezrach. Ha Ezrach. The hey, the extra hey, Ha Ezrach, which is the hey Ayidiyah, defined noun here. Ha Ezrach is Lotziyat Anashim. The way Rashi reads it is Ezrach by itself would have meant anybody who is a member, which would be men, women. Ha Ezrach, Rashi writes, is the miyuman sheb Ezrachim, the more appropriate one amongst the Ezrachim, and that would be the men versus the women. So the hey here is a defined noun, and therefore it says that Ezrach comes to exclude women. Kol, so the word kol is rabote d'ktanim, to include the ktanim. Amar mar, ha Ezrach lo tziyat anashim. Here, this limud, which is ha Ezrach, says women are not chayavot in the mitzvah of sukkah. Lememra, There comes to teach you the Ezrach ben Hashim ben Gavre, mashmo, that the default or generic interpretation of Ezrach would include men and women. Had you not had the hay on it, Ezrach would have mean both men and women. Ha-Ezrach comes as an exclusionary term to say women are out, men are in. Vahatanya. Don't we have an exact opposite limud, which is Ha-Ezrach le-rabote den Hashim. So that Ha-Ezrach comes to teach you the women are included. Ezrachayot shechayavot bi-inui. To teach you that they are also included in the mitzvah of Inui by Yom HaKippurim. The term Ezrach is used both by Sukkah. The term Ezrach is also used by the Inuyim of Yom HaKippurim. So in the instance of Sukkah, we're saying that the Ezrach means men and women. HaEzrach comes to exclude women. But then by Yom HaKippurim, we're saying that women are included because the word HaEzrach teaches you that women are included. Alma Ezrach Gavrei Mashmo. So it sounds like from Yom HaKippurim that the generic word Ezrach means just men. Ha-Ezrach is a riboy to say that women are included as well. So now here there's a question about the girsa in the Gemara. The way Rashi's girsa it is, Amarabo hilchata ninu basmichinu rabbanan akrai. They're both halacha the Moshe Mitzinai, in the plural form here. They're both halacha the Moshe Mitzinai, and the Chachamim connected them to a pasuk. Now Rashi says here, so they're both halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. One of them is their true interpretation of the pasuk. So that halacha the Moshe Mitzinai uses the pasuk in a manner that is the proper interpretation. The other one is halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. They connected to the pasuk, but they're using the interpretation of the pasuk the opposite of what it really means. So one ha'ezrach is right, and one ha'ezrach is wrong. One of them is a miyut, one of them is a riboy. One of those is right and matches the halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai. One of them is wrong, but we still use it. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot had an alternative girsa, which was hilchata hi, that it is a halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai, lashon yachid, because one of them is halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai, and one of them is an asmacht on the Krah, because one of them is the right interpretation of the pasuk, and one is wrong. The one that's wrong is not based on the pasuk, but is halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai. So the way Tosafot has it is, one's Samchu al Akrah, and one is Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. The way Rashi has it, they're both Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, and one of them is the proper interpretation of the Pasuk, and one is an incorrect interpretation of the Pasuk. And that's what the Gemara says, Hey Kra, Hey Hilchata. According to Tosafot, means which one is the Asmachto, and which one is Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. According to Rashi, means which Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai follows the Pasuk, the Pashtura Pasuk, and which one is Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai that is not following the Pasuk. Bitu, Kra, Lomali, Hilchata, Lomali. Secondary question is, why do I need both a halacha l'moshe Mitzinai and a asmachta on the pasuk? Ha-sukah, mitzvah taseh, shazman grama. This is what David asked before. What do you mean? What do we need any of this for? Sukkah is a mitzvah taseh, shazman grama. It's a time-bound positive commandment. Chol mitzvah taseh, shazman grama, nashim pturot. And any time-bound positive commandment, women are exempt from. So forget about halacha l'moshe Mitzinai. Forget about the smachta from the pasuk. You have a reason that they're exempt here from the mitzvah because of mitzvah d'asei shazman groma. So now the Gemara says, Yom HaKippurim mid Rav Yehuda Marav nafko. So Yom HaKippurim, we learn out of Rav Yehuda Marav. Also, same question. Why do I need a halacha l'moshe Mitzinai? Why do I need an inclusionary smachta to say that the women are chayavot? We already have that from the din of Rabbi Yehuda Marav. The Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Chayin Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. So we have this in the Misora, and it's also from the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Shmuel. Amar Korah, the pasuk says, Ish o Isha. Ish o Isha here is with regards to punishments. Hishva kaduv Isha the Ish, the chol onshin shebet Torah. That the Torah says that men and women are equal whenever it comes to punishment. Whenever it comes to a negative commandment or punishment, men and women are always equal. So over here, when you're talking about Yom Kippur, we're talking about the inui of Yom Kippur. We're talking about something that's punishable by karet. And number two, we're talking about something that is restrictive in nature. So therefore, women should be chayavot. What do you need a halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, a riboy from asmachta? They're chayavot because ish v'isha. They're equal for all onshin shebet Torah. Any lotat say, anything that involves a punishment, you don't need any riboy. They're automatically chayavot. That's what the Mishnah in Kiddushin says. Their exemption is for positive, time-bound, positive commandments. But any lota say, any punishment, they're equal to men. So Gemara says here, Amar Abayi, La'olam sukkah hilchato. The sukkah tour comes from halacha de Moshe Mitzinai. Pasuk is out of context, it's not the right way. According to the pasuk, the women would have been chayavot. The halacha de Moshe Mitzinai says that they're not chayavot. Ve'itzrich. So why do I need halacha de Moshe Mitzinai? It's a mitzvah to say, shazman grama. That we invoke the principle that you live in the sukkah the way you live in your house. Madira ishvishto. When you live in your house, you live like a husband and wife. Av sukkah ishvishto. So too in the sukkah, husband and wife have to live in the sukkah together. And there would be an obligation for the women to be in the sukkah, kamash malon, that that's not the case. So I would have a havamina that mitzvah d'asei shazman grama does not apply here. Because of teshvuk ein taduru. So teshvuk ein taduru would obligate the women to be in the sukkah. Along comes the lamachom of Shasai and says, no, that's not the case. Now, again, that will not be the simplest interpretation of the pasuk. If you look at Ezrach and the pasuk, Ezrach would have been men. Ha-Ezrach would have been a reboy to include women as well. So the exclusion of women, the Ha-Ezrach is learned out of context. When the Gemara says Ha-Ezrach comes to exclude women, that's the reverse of what it should have been. But they're just putting it, connecting it to a pasuk, but it's really Allah the Moshe mi Sinai. Now, in terms, we've spoken about this before, that if this is the way the women become obligated in Sukkah because of Teshuvah and Taduru, what does that mean of the nature of the obligation of the women? Are the women independently obligated because the way you live in a house is the way you live in a Sukkah, and just like women live in houses, they live in a Sukkah? Or does this mean in terms of the man's obligation? The man's obligation to be in the Sukkah is the same way that he is in his house. So the wife needs to be in the Sukkah because of his mitzvah. His mitzvah is to live in the Sukkah the way that he lives in his house. In his house he lives with his wife, so too in the Sukkah he needs to live with his wife. And that would mean that the obligation is a derivative of the man's obligation, not a separate obligation on the women. That's open to interpretation based on what Abai says of Teshvu Kein Taduru. Now we have Rava's interpretation. Rava agrees with him that Sukkah is the one that's not contextually correct. But he says that the reason for the aloha, the Moshe Misinai, is different. Because we have a Gzeira Shavah, which we saw before, 15-15. Both Sukkot begins on the 15th of Tishrei, and Pesach begins on the 15th of Nisan. And we have a Gzeira Shavah between them to bring the alochot between them. And that's how we learned in the earlier in the Mishnayot with regards to Rabbi Eliezer, requiring one to have the 14 meals in the Sukkah, and the Chachamim saying that the first night is the only obligatory meal. Where do they know that from? From Matzah on the night of Pesach, from Gzeir Shavah 15-15. So now, if I extrapolate, or if I expand that Gzeir Shavah, women are also Chayavot in Matzah. Why are they Chayavot in Achilat Matzah? It's a mitzvah asei, shezman grama, it's a time-bound positive commandment. Because there's a correlation or adjacency between matzah and chametz, and that teaches us, that juxtaposition teaches us that kol sheyeshno b'bal tochal chametz, anyone who is chayav in not consuming or eating chametz, is chayav in the eating of matzah. And so since the women, as we said before, are chayavot in all mitzvot lo taseh, and they're included under the restriction of eating chametz, therefore, they're included in the mitzvot to eat matzah. So because of that, I would have thought, just like women have an obligation on the night of Pesach to eat matzah, so too they're going to have an obligation to be in the sukkah. And that's what he says, sakha, that means, yelit chamisha asar chamisha mechaga matzot. Ma'ala halan nashim chayavot, afgan nashim chayavot. Just like over there, women are obligated, so too by sukkah they're obligated. K'mash malam, the halacha l'moshim misinai says, no, that's not the case. So now the Gemara says, hashad amar tzukah hukoto. Now that you tell me that the Allah of the Moshe Mishinai is what teaches us that women are turot by Sukkah, despite the fact that there are possibilities of including them in the mitzvah, they're excluded from the Allah of the Moshe Mishinai, then, what do I need the pasuk for? The pasuk, when you're doing the asmach on the pasuk, it's totally out of context. We're saying it's wrong. So now, why do I need it? The Gemara says here, Ha'ezra comes to the Rabot et Gerim, to say that converts are included. Salkadatcha, I mean, I would have thought Ha'ezrach b'Yisrael, a citizen, a member of Klal Yisrael, is Chayav, Amar Rachmano, Veloet HaGerim, which would exclude someone who was a convert. Mashvalon, Ha'ezrach, that reboy comes to teach you, not only are the members, but even new members are Chayav. Even the Gerim, even the converts are Chayav in the Mitzvah Sukkah. Now, Tosafot over here says, he brings down throughout Shas, he does like a quick survey of Shas, and he says that it's somewhat inconsistent. Sometimes the Gemara says the word Yisrael, or B'nai Yisrael, says, excludes Gerim, and then we need a special reboy to bring in Gerim. In other places it says Gerim are included without it. And he says the Gemara is not consistent here with this approach. Tosafot's answer is a very difficult answer, the question is better than the answer, and he uses his answer in numerous places, and the answer bothers me, because I don't think it's a real solution. He says, maybe there's some other reboy we didn't know about that included Gerim and all these other places where we assume Gerim are Chayavim, even though the term Yisrael or B'nai Yisrael is used. It may be true. What you're suggesting is true, that Ezrach, the Torah, when it uses ger, we always translate ger as a convert, but the true meaning of the word ger, like in Parshat Mishpatim, and like the way Avram uses it, when he speaks to Bnei Chet, ger is a stranger, means you come from somewhere else. That you're not local, you're not a resident of the place, you're coming from somewhere else. And so the Torah admonishes us to take care of the ger. The ger, not the convert, but the stranger, someone who comes from somewhere else, someone who's not a member or not a party. So in contrast to that, if you said Ezrach versus ger, Ezrach is someone who is not a stranger, he's a member, he is someone who belongs here, he was born in the land and he's local. So that would be true, that Ezrach would refer to someone from Eretz Yisrael, and a ger would be a stranger, someone from outside of Eretz Yisrael. In that context, a convert happens to be that way as well, because a convert is an outsider, and that's why their ger can be used as a term to describe the convert, as the term is broader than simply a convert. Come to the conclusion, Kamash Malon, that gerim are included. Yom HaKippurim. Now, didn't we say before Yom HaKippurim, you can learn out to me Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Nafka, because it's a lo taseh. If that's the case, lo nitzricha, ela tosefet inui. I need that for the additional inui that's added on. We learned this in the Gemara in Yoma, that there is a requirement to be mosif michol al kodesh. By Yom HaKippurim, there is a demand that we expand Yom HaKippurim beyond its borders, because of the pasuk says mitishat me'erev ad erev. So what do you mean on the 9th? And the Yom Kippur is on the 10th. So one of the limudim that we had there was that it has to begin on the 9th. You have to bring part of Yom Kippur into the 9th. You have to extend it. The Rambam takes it literally. It says that Tosefet only applies to the inuyim of Yom HaKippurim, not to the Isser Melacha and the Kabbalah of the Chag itself, whereas many of the other Rishonim believe that it is that case, and that's why they expand it to include Shabbat and Yom Tov other places, that there is a requirement of Tosefet Shabbat, Tosefet Yom Tov. The Rambam limits this to Tosefet Yom HaKippurim because he thinks it's about the inuyim. And in one other place, the Rambam in Perusha Mishnayot mentions it by Tisha B'Av, because that would be the same thing, that you would have Tosefet Inuim, the same five Inuim that apply by Yom Kippur, apply by Tisha B'Av. He doesn't bring down the Halacha, but he does mention such a concept in the Mishnayot. So over here, this Tosefet Inui, the Gemara asks about that Tosefet Inui, you're going to be punished with Karet. Inui has a Chiyuv Karet associated with it. The Gemara says, no, that the Tosefet doesn't have an Azhara, doesn't have an Onesh with it, simply a Mitzvat Asay. So that's what the Gemara is coming to. The Halacha, the Moshe Min Sinai, is coming to tell you that Tosefet Inui, the women, you would think they're not included in that Tosefet Inui, because that's a mitzvah asay, shazman grama, because it's been now minutak, separated from the punishment and the warning and the lot asay, so all you're left with now is an asay without any punishment associated with it. That you would think women are not chayavot, mashmalon, that they are chayavot, and that's what ha-ezrach, the ribuy of ha-ezrach, comes to include the women, and that's Halacha Moshe Misinai to teach us that ribuy includes women. And so that's why, since you would have thought that Tevzeh Inui Me'onish Vazera, Lo Nitchayvu Anashim Klal, you would think women are exempt from it, Mashmalan, that they are Chayavot, based on the Halacha of the Moshe Mitzinai. Amamar, Kol the Rabot Ezaktanim. We just had before, the Limud, we said that Ha-Ezrach was to exclude women, which we said is not the right interpretation of the Pasuk. And then we use Ha-Ezrach to be a Reboy, to include Geirim. And then we say Kol Ezrach to include Kitanim. Mar says, that's not. Our Mishnah says, Nashim Vavadim Kitanim Turim in a Sukkah. They're exempt from Sukkah. What are you telling me that you need coal to rebuild that the Kitanim? Sounds like they're Chayavim Midoraita in Sukkah. And then you have a Mishnah that says they're Turim. Lokasha. Kan be Katan Shigia Lechinuch. Kan be Katan Shalo Yigia Lechinuch. So here it's definitely saying that it's an Asmachto de Rabbanan. But here it's learning that a Katan that reaches the age of Chinuch is Chayav to be in the Sukkah. Katan that has yet to reach the age of Chinuch, training, does not belong in the Sukkah. What do you mean? That's not a mitzvah d'oraita. You have kol ha'ezrachas would make it into a mitzvah d'oraita to have him there by the time he reaches chinuch. The din of chinuch is only a din d'rabbanan. We've spoken in the past about this. Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, what the din d'rabbanan is. Is it a chiyuv on the katan himself? He has a mitzvah to do it? Or is the parent obligated to make sure that the child does the mitzvah? It has nafkaminot on who you think the obligation on in terms of their performance of mitzvot. Here you say it's only a rabbinic nature that requirement. You're right, it is a din derabbanan, and the kol ha'ezrach that includes katanim is only an asmachto, a din derabbanan, but they connected it to a pasuk, but it's not a real limud from the pasuk. Make it a mitzvah de'oraita. Now the Gemara talks about katan she'en tzarich li'imo. Who is this katan that doesn't need his mother, that is ra'oi l'chinuch? Hey chidami, katan she'en tzarich li'imo. How do I know when a child is independent of his mother? So amrei debei Rabbi Anai, kol shenifne ve'en imo mikanachto. It's a case where he's fully toilet trained to the point where his mother does not have to wipe him after he goes to the bathroom. That's a sign of independence from his mother, and that's what it means, ein tzarich l'imo. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish omer, go shenei'ur mishnato veino kurea ima. Anybody who wakes up from their sleep and doesn't call for their mother. Mar says, ima, dolim nami karu. Even people are older, they call for their mother when they wake up from their sleep. Now the word gedolim over here, you have to figure out what it means. Gedolim in the Gemara sometimes means people who are of age. They're already over the age of bar mitzvah. The Gemara is saying over here that even people over the age of bar mitzvah, when they wake up in the middle of the night, they call their mother. So that's a possibility, which would be a wild interpretation here of the Gemara, which says that everybody still calls for their mother. Everybody wants their mommy. All right, that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is it's a relative. It's not an absolute term, but a relative term. Gedolim, as opposed to ketanim. Gedolim, as opposed to ketanim, we have that in the Gemara in Ketubot, speaks about yitomim. When you have yitomim there, the Gemara calls ketanim and gedolim. And the Gemara says, don't take it literally. It doesn't mean katan, katan mamash, gadol, gadol mamash. But rather, ketanim and gedolim there are relative terms. That even a katan can be a gadol, or a gadol can be a katan. It's just one is relative to the other. And the gadol over here can be someone who is not classified as a katan, who we're going to define in a second what a katan is. He's the one who needs his mother. So gadol, someone doesn't need his mother. So the Gemara says here that even a gadol, even someone who's not necessarily bar mitzvah yet, but it's older, he's 8, 9 years old, when he wakes up, he goes, mommy. He calls for his mommy, even at the age of 8 or 9. So now, how do I distinguish him from a young child that's calling for his mother? The Gemara says, Ella, kosh neyur v'eino kore ima ima. So it's a difference between someone who is older, when they wake up, they call their mother. But as soon as they realize where they are and what's happening, they stop calling their mother. A younger child, when he wakes up, calls mommy, 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 and doesn't stop calling mommy until mommy shows up. And that's the difference. So again, if you look at it in relative terms, then it'll be easier. The baby wakes up and is calling mommy or is crying until the mother comes. The adult, the 8-year-old, wakes up and calls mommy, but then they figure out, they get their bearings and they stop calling their mother. They can be pacified without their mother actually showing up. Just knowing that their mother's there is enough, or that their mother doesn't have to show up to pacify them. So that might be the distinction that the Gemara is drawing here between Gadol and Katan. Maseh v'yalda kalato shel Shemaya zakein, maseh listor. Maseh says, but you bring in an incident here to say exact opposite of what the Mishnah says. Mishnah says, Katan she'in tzarech li'imo is chayav. And then you bring me a case of a baby that they're making and putting him into a sukkah. Maseh says, chasurei mechsra, the Mishnah is missing some wording here, some key transitional wording, which is, v'ochiktani, v'shamay machmir. Shemay is machmir. Sounds like here that he doesn't think this is the Iker Alocha. But he's machmir that even children below the age of chinuch, he puts them in the sukkah. My senami. And now I bring you the incident where he's machmir. The eldak alatosho shemai zakenu picheta de mazivai pulled back the roof. He said, kechal mita b'shvila katan. And he took care of the baby to make sure that the baby was in the sukkah. Api his chumrah that he kept, that he had even younger children that were chayavim in the sukkah. Okay, next Mishnah. Koshivate yamim adam ose sukkato keva ubeito arai. For the whole 7 days of Sukkot, person has to make the sukkah his place of living, place of dwelling, and his house is the temporary location. Yerdugish shamim, if it starts to rain, meimatay mutar lefanot. When can he start clearing things out of the sukkah? If it rains, when can you leave the sukkah and say it's enough and it's no longer my dwelling, I can move somewhere else? So mishatisrach hamikpeh, the time when the porridge, when the dishes go bad because of the rain. The rain goes in there, it gets into the things you're serving, it's ruining the things that you're serving. Mashlu mashal, ma davar dumeh. They have a parable which explains this idea, which is the idea that when it rains on Sukkot, what does that mean? The eved shebadim zokos l'rabo, the servant who comes to dilute the cup for his master, meaning he's going to pour him his drink. Shachvelo lo koton al panav, and then he throws it back in his face. Takes the pitcher and throws it back in his face. The Gemara asks who threw what and whose face, and what does it mean? That the Gemara will interpret. Not today, so we'll get that in tomorrow's daf. How do you do that? How do you make your sukkah the dwelling place and your house the temporary location? Easy. Are you lokelim naim? Ma'alan the sukkah. Now here, the Gemara is going to use the word ma'alan, take up to the sukkah, because as Rashi told us before, the sukkot are on the roofs of the houses. So he says, if you have really nice dishes, cutlery, silverware, you bring them into the sukkah. You're going to live in the sukkah. You got to bring in your dishes and all your items into the sukkah. Mitzvot na'ot, you have nice mattresses, a nice bed, nice sheets. Alan the sukkah, you bring them into the sukkah. Ochel v'shoteh u'mitayel basukkah. You eat, drink, and obviously mitayel here does not mean to take a tour in the sukkah, to walk around the sukkah. Mitayel means to spend time. You spend time in the sukkah. So everything you do, eat, drink, and spend time, is all done inside of the sukkah. Minahani milit. How do we know that's true? Tanra banan, this is what we've learned all the way along, which is teshvu ke'ein taduru. That you have to dwell in the sukkah the way that you would dwell in your house. The same way you would utilize your house during the rest of the year, that's the way you utilize your sukkah during Sukkot. That's teshvu ke'ein taduru. Mikan amru, kol shivat yamim osi adam sukkato kevo beito arai. From this we learn that during those 7 days of Sukkot, a person makes the sukkah his permanent location, and his house the more temporary location. Ketzad. He has nice utensils. He brings them into the sukkah. It's old, no, nice bedding. Malan the sukkah. He brings them into the sukkah. Ochel b'shote umitayel b'sukkah. Eats, drinks, and hangs out in the sukkah. Umishanein b'sukkah. And he learns in the sukkah. Ini, is that really true? V'amarava mikro mitna mimitalalta. That you can learn Tanakh and Mishnayot in this sukkah. Utnoi bar mimitalalta. But when it comes to Gemara, you have to learn that outside of the sukkah. Again, here the Gemara we're using in loose terms, because we're talking about a Tanaic work that is speaking here. If we're saying about a Tanaic work, we're saying that the Tanoi is the explanation of the Mishnayot, the understanding of the Mishnayot. Same way the Gemara is trying to interpret and understand the Mishnayot. They had the same thing in the time of the Tanaim, which is this understanding of the Mishnayot. Where it says, Lokasha, habemigras, habeyune. It's the difference between Iyun and Bikiyut. When you're doing bikiyut, that you can do in the sukkah, because that doesn't require a lot of focus or concentration. It's just review. And because it's review, that you can do in the sukkah. Iyune, to delve into it, to plumb the depths of the Gemara, that requires much more yishuv adat, and that can be done outside the sukkah. And that's Rashi says here, if you need some fresh air, l'archiv dato, to open up his mind and to feel better, then you can go out of the sukkah, because that helps you with your learning. As we said before, that a mitzdayer is patur min sukkah. And over here, this is the equivalent of a mitzdayer, because he's unable to focus on what he needs to do, and therefore he goes outside to get some fresh air in order to facilitate the ability to learn. And that is permitted. When he's learning in front of Rav Chista, they used to run through the Gemara together, and then afterwards they come back, and then they would delve into the reasoning behind each one of them, meaning that they used to do bikiyut first, and run through the bikiyut, and then afterwards they would sit down and try to delve into the understanding of what he said. This they would go through, this halacha, chayav potur, chayav potur, chayav potur, and he come back and investigate each one of them. Why am I chayav here? Why am I potur here? How does that reconcile with other things? That was done after the fact. But you see there are two types of learning that goes on. Again, Rashi calls them both iyun. We call it bikiyut and iyun. Rashi calls them both iyun, but it's a different type of iyun. There's an iyun, which is a more superficial type of survey, and then there's one that's more in-depth. And that'll be the difference of when you can stay in the sukkah or need to be in the sukkah versus leaving the sukkah. Amarava, mane mishtaya b'mitaltolo. So the drinking utensils are in the sukkah. That means your cups that you use to drink with, those are in the sukkah. Mane michla b'mitaltolo. And your food dishes are outside of the sukkah. Now what are food dishes over here? Rashi explains that mane michla are ki'arot. Ki'arot are either the bowls, whether those are usually used as serving dishes. Those are the serving dishes, or whether they're the private bowls of the individual, it's not clear here. But those utensils you can't leave in the sukkah. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that mani michlo, he says there's an alternative, which is kederot. That means your pots. The pots don't belong in the sukkah. Pots are dirty, and you don't keep them in the sukkah. That's just so you bring the food in, and you take the pots out. The pots don't stay. You wouldn't keep the pots in your dining room either. Just like you don't keep the pots in your dining room, you don't keep them in your sukkah. Now the difference would be when you have to remove them. Utensils like your spit and your barbecue and your pots, you have to take out of the sukkah immediately. You can't leave them there at all. Ki'arot, as long as you're utilizing them, they can be in the sukkah because it's normal to have serving dishes or dishes in the sukkah. Only once you've finished using them, then you have to take them out because you don't stay there. Cups, on the other hand, might be something that is more generic and less ma'us, and therefore you leave them in the sukkah. Even when they're dirty, you might leave them still in the sukkah. Chatzva v'shachil bar mitalauta. Pitcher, Rashi says, is an earthenware pitcher, and shachil is a wooden bucket. Have to be outside of the sukkah. Shraga mimitalto, and the candle is inside the sukkah. Ve'amila barmit mimitalalta. And some say that the candle has to be outside the sukkah. Below plige, they don't argue. Ab sukkah gdola, ab sukkah ktana. Depends on the size of the sukkah. In a large sukkah, putting a candle inside the sukkah makes sense, both because you need it for the light, as well as there's no danger because there's more room in there, and you're not going to catch fire. The sukkah won't catch fire. On the other hand, in a smaller sukkah where there's no room for the candle, you probably don't need as much light, and you have big risk that it'll catch fire. There we keep it outside of the sukkah. So there's no argument here. Lo pligi abesukah gedolah abesukah ktana is that differentiation that we have. Okay, we'll stop over here.